Welcome back. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rachel.
And every week we watch a formative movie from my childhood, mm-hmm. and one that I generally enjoyed,
mm-hmm.
and force Rachel to watch it.
That's right. Force being the operative word there.
Yeah. We also make, we is not accurate at all. Rachel makes a delicious sugar-free treat for us to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, review is also not an accurate term. I guess we judge the movie based on...
Yeah, I don't know about review.
Yeah, based on our views on feminism and equality, what masculinity should be, gender, race, etc., etc.
We have a lot of fun.
We do have a lot of fun with it. But it typically ends up being a recipe for disaster. So we actually have some pretty awesome news that I was surprised about. As of this week, we actually have gone over 150 listens total.
That's wild.
I know, it is wild. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, for listening. This is really amazing to us. And on top of that, our very first episode, the Back to the Future one, has over 50 individual listens at this point.
Wow.
50 people have listened to that. What is wrong with everyone?
That's too many people. I don't like it.
What are you doing with your time? Go read a book.
Just kidding. Listen to us.
Yeah, listen to us, though. I mean, you've got time. You got time to do both. Listen to us while you read a book. That's fine, too. But anyway, Rachel, you're popping something in the oven. What is it that you're making for us today?
I am making a sugar-free yellow cake with chocolate frosting.
Yellow cake!
Yeah, just like... It's a very southern dessert. My grandmother used to make one. She loved it. She used to make one for basically herself, and we'd come over, and there'd be like a quarter of the cake left, and she'd be like, here you go.
So she ate a quarter of the cake before you got there.
No, three quarters of the cake.
Oh, there's only a quarter left. Oh,
yes.
God. Was so, Grandma a large woman?
I mean, she was old.
Yes. That doesn't answer it at all.
She was a bigger lady, I guess.
Obviously a yellow cake is yellow, and that makes mm-hmm. it yellow cake, but is there anything else that kind of differentiates it from other cake?
It's got more yolks in it, which gives it that yellow color. It's richer.
Oh, okay.
It's got that classic, like, milk chocolate frosting on top.
Yeah.
It's very much like, here you go, grandkids. Get the hell out of my house and go play cake.
Yeah. So you sound like you may have a specific instance of where that happened to you. Did you get kicked out of the house while Grandma made yellow cake?
She didn't make it. I told you, she already made it.
Well, that was one time. I didn't assume that was every time.
It was every time.
Every time you ate yellow cake, it was already made,
and
three quarters of it was gone.
And it wasn't my grandma. My grandma was on my dad's side. It was my Nana.
Nana,
my mom's side.
But she was your grandmother on your mother's side.
Yes.
Is what I should say for clarification.
Because Grandma Smith did not really like sweets that much.
Oh, that's a shame. She was sweet enough already.
Sweet is not the word I would use to describe her, but...
So you've told me before you have, fond memories of, Nana.
No, other grandma.
Oh, I get them mixed up. Well, you have bad memories of Nana, who made the yellow cake.
Well, it's mixed. Some were good, some were bad. She wasn't my favorite grandma.
Well, tell me a happy time you remember about Nana.
There's a lot centered around food. One time...
Was she a big cook?
No, she hated to cook.
But she did it sometimes.
Sometimes, but it wasn't foods that she cooked. Hold on, I gotta set my timer.
So that yellow cake wasn't baked with love, it was baked with, like, resentment.
It was boxed. It was boxed cake and boxed icing, too, I'm fairly certain. My mom will tell you, she would tell you that Nana hated to cook. My mother also hates to cook.
That yellow cake was came out of a box, just like your grandma, who's been boxed in for years, making things she didn't want to make for you ungrateful kids.
Well, now she's in a box in the ground.
Oh, yeah, it's come full circle.
It's full circle. It's like...
Some clever full circle.
Just like George Lucas said, it's like poetry.
In that it rhymes, yeah.
So, a fond memory of Nana involving yellow cake, since we're talking about food.
Sure.
Talking about yellow cake is She had this, the house that she had built was in a subdivision. It was the very first house in the subdivision. They were the very first Jews in that neighborhood in Shreveport.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah, I think you mentioned that to me once mm-hmm. before. That's,
they were not well loved in the 50s. And
well,
so,
to be fair, they haven't been well loved across all of history if we look at that. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
She's the one who used to tell me terrifying concentration camp stories.
Oh, Jesus.
She wasn't in one.
Over yellow cake.
Over yellow cake. Yeah. But anyway, she's a little bit of a drama queen.
I don't know if you can be a drama queen when you're talking about the Holocaust, but...
All right, white man.
Oh, okay.
If we don't laugh, we'll cry.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I
mean, hey, I am laughing, so...
Yeah. You know. So, anyway, she had this kitchen. So the house was built in the 50s, was my point. So she had this galley kitchen that you would come in through the garage and be in this little tiny galley kitchen. And her house always had this very particular smell because she was a hoarder also. Not a gross hoarder.
But I know what you mean because, like... Both of my grandparents' house have a very distinctive smell to them. And not even like an old person smell, but just something unique, I would say.
Yeah, it's an old things smell. And she wasn't really, she was like a child of the Depression, so she wasn't necessarily hoarding. It was protecting thyself in case another bank bust happened.
Sure, yeah.
So you'd walk into her little galley kitchen and... she would hoard food. That was kind of bad. So we had to clean out her refrigerator almost every time we went. I knew she would have yellow cake because she had this glass-topped cake serving.
Oh, yeah.
Dish that only... I've only ever seen in little old ladies' houses.
Sure.
But I kind of want one.
I'll put it on the gift list.
But cakes don't last long enough in our house to justify it.
Yeah, I mean... But maybe I can control myself, or you can make a cake that's, like, not good, and we could put it in there.
Defeats the purpose.
Decorative cake.
No, I'm not doing that. And she would, you know, if I was, my favorite thing was to be the first grandchild there, because she loved the other grandchildren better than me.
Oh, God.
Clearly loved them better than me, which is fine.
Yeah.
I'm not the most lovable to everyone. I was my other grandma's favorite.
Oh, that's not true at all. You are the most lovable.
Thanks.
I've met your family. You are the only, you might be the only lovable person in that whole family.
I was my dad's mom's favorite, so that was fine. But I did love being the first grandchild to come in because Nana would pay attention to me if I was the first one there.
Sure.
And she'd say, I'd come in and she'd be like, oh my goodness. That's exactly what she'd say, just like that. And she had, it was funny because she had a really like, old school southern accent, and so she was just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And she would you know, I'd come in the front door and she'd have yellow cake and she'd say, Rachel, don't you want some cake? And I would say, oh yes ma'am, very carefully, yes ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Always very carefully.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes ma'am, thank you very much. And then she'd cut me off a way too large a piece. Always way too large a piece. And my mom would say,
You can have an eighth of the cake. Everyone else gets a 32nd of the cake.
Well, also, my other cousins lived in town with her.
Oh, okay.
And so they were eating yellow cake all throughout the week in the summer.
Gotcha. So you had to make up your yellow cake time.
Yes.
Your yellow cake quota.
Yes.
In one sitting.
And, my mom would see the giant slice that she gave me, and she'd say, Mother, I don't think she needs that much cake. And then my mom would proceed to eat, like, half of the piece of cake that Nana gave me.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, then, yeah, your cake got hijacked.
Yes. My mom loves carbs.
Mm. Well, don't we all?
Yes.
Well, so speaking of carbs, because we have erythritol and almond flour and everything going into this yellow cake, are there going to be a lot of carbs, or?
Very few.
Well, what would they come from?
The carbohydrates?
Yeah.
I mean, carbohydrates are in everything. There's a few carbohydrates in almond flour. Let's see. Yeah, there's like a tiny amount.
5 grams in a serving.
Yeah, five grams. There's 0 grams in erythritol and There's maybe a little bit in the almond milk.
You know, we haven't really talked about, like, what carbs are or why we're trying to avoid them. I wonder if people are wondering that. Should we... What are... Because, you know what? I don't even know. I just know that you've told me, like, carbs make my belly swell up. So I try to...
I didn't tell you that at all.
Well, I told it to myself in your voice, in my head. And that's what motivates me to not eat them anymore. But to be fair, we do have a carb reload day where we eat a ton of carbs.
Well, I'm turning 30 this year. And so I've never seen my abs. I'm a thin person by nature, but I've never seen my abs.
But that's a bald-faced lie. Because when we worked at that sign burning company and we were fucking ripped, both of us,
did
we
I
worked
have
there
abs?
Together. Yeah, we both did. We used to look at them in the mirror when we'd come home after our late night shift, and we'd be like just like posing in the mirror doing blue steel looks.
That's the kind of people we are, by
the
way.
Well, shit, if you've got abs, you're going to stare at them for hours.
Like, yes!
I haven't had them since then, and I probably never will ever again.
I don't know.
But. That was the one time I was in the Marine Corps and I didn't have abs in the Marines.
You didn't have abs in the Marines?
No, I was emaciated, but I didn't have abs.
How did you not see them? I thought they. Never mind.
I mean, I didn't have a belly either, but I didn't have like a six pack or anything.
Not like Burks, who had somehow maintained a belly.
Oh yeah, there was this buddy of mine in my unit in Japan. Named Burks, he had a, I don't know how he maintained that beer gut somehow through boot camp and all of his Marine Corps career, but Jesus, I have a picture of him somewhere where he's like puffing it out even more than usual, and it's absurd.
Wasn't he kind of proud of it?
He looks like Senior Card Gage from Homestar Runner, if you guys remember that.
Man.
There's a throwback to the early internet animation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, so what are carbs? Why do we try to avoid them?
Carbs are just, they're a macronutrient, which means that, like, you've got your proteins, your fats, your carbohydrates.
Like the stuff on the food pyramid.
No, it's the stuff that's in food, though.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, doesn't the food pyramid, like, separate it by those macronutrients, I feel like?
No, it separates them by grain.
Fats. Oh, yeah, meats and fish.
Yeah, and the old school one did. I don't know about Michelle Obama's.
I don't know either. But I feel like I might have seen one recently. But I'm just making this up off the top of my head. So
stop.
Let's look it up later.
So quit it.
So stop it.
Shut up, Jordan.
Yeah.
Don't ask me a question and then interrupt me with your nonsense.
Yeah, okay.
So carbohydrates are just a macronutrient. So it's not, carbs aren't bad. I don't like people to think that I think that carbs are inherently evil or bad, or
because we need them, right?
Yeah, we need them. We need them to function. Our muscles run off carbohydrates.
It's
so,
like an energy or fuel kind of.
Yeah. But the reason that I'm trying to avoid them is because carbs are calorically dense, and I'll never see my abs if I lay on the calories.
So that explains why, like, if you have a Coke or a Diet Coke, like Diet Coke. You know, zero calories.
Yep, zero carbohydrates.
No sugar in it.
Yep, because your body doesn't process the aspartame. And I did have a Diet Coke yesterday, and it was glorious. They're the only things that'll fix my migraines. I've only had one every 3 years. Don't judge me!
But, you know, you get a 20-ounce bottle of Coke, and it's like 300 and something calories or something like that, which is ridiculous. So it's almost all from sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sugar, you know... And for me, like, if you have autoimmune stuff, like diabetes, polycystic ovaries, they can be aggravated by an excess of carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And also, like, Jordan and I both lift weights, so...
We lift, bro.
We lift, bro. My timer's about to go off.
Oh, nice.
So I'm gonna check my cakes.
Yeah, let's take a look, but finish your thought, and then we'll dive into this as soon as it's ready.
Well, it's going to be a little bit. Got my cakes cool, and I've got to make frosting.
How dare you deceive me with that timer?
The cake's got to bake, Jordan. What were we talking about? Carbs?
Yeah, you were saying something.
Weightlifting. And, like, your muscles run off carbohydrates, and, like, there's all kinds of bro science and all kinds of...
Bro science? Is that a field?
Yeah, that's a thing. Bro science, which is, like...
That can't be the technical term.
You can look it up. Bro science is the fitness guru science that's like tenuous at best.
I have a feeling that in the Venn diagram.
Shut up and let me finish. It's tenuous at best. You have to let my you have to let my jokes land, or like I'm not doing this anymore, or I won't do this podcast anymore.
They're landing for me. I'm laughing my ass off.
You would just talk over half of them.
Well, you just give me so many good thoughts that come into my head.
Shut up, Jordan.
So bro science, tenuous at best.
Tenuous at best is nutritional science. If you're going to ask me a question, I'm going to give you the answer, but you have to let me complete the answer. Remember when we lived in Austin and we lived in that apartment complex and those little kids would run up and ask you a question? And
oh, I hated that.
Yeah, that's what's happening right now. They'd be like, hey, why do dogs walk on four legs? And you're like, hey, it's because of the way that they evolved. They're quadrupeds. And they'd be like, why is the sky blue? Hey, you want to see me do a trick? That's you.
I've become what I hate. No!
Hey.
Oh.
So anyway, carbs, I'm avoiding them because I want to see my abs and because I'm vain.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's take a look at this yellow cake, see where it's at. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
So the yellow cake is finally done.
It is.
And Rachel, you didn't sound too happy with the way this looks. I disagree. I think it looks amazing. And it looks perfect to me, but why don't you like this?
I'm rarely satisfied with the way my desserts look. But I have to either try harder or stop complaining. It's really...
I think it's more of a stop complaining thing, because I think your standards are just too high.
It looks okay. It called for a smaller pan than the ones that I had. It called for like 7-inch cake pans, and I only had 9-inch. And so the cake's a little bit like not as tall as I would like it to be.
Okay.
I mean, it's not super yellow, but that's fine. I didn't add any food coloring. So.
Yeah, it isn't very yellow, but I mean, it looks appetizing to me,
yeah.
And it has layers, and the layers are like really well defined.
They are nice and
sharp.
Which
I think is neat. And like the structure of the actual cake.
Jordan watched a lot of Great British Baking Show.
If y'all haven't watched it, the Great British Baking Show is the best baking show ever on TV. A competition where people are just like supportive of each other and nice and sweet.
So everything that Jordan says he learned from the Great British Baking Show.
That's true.
When it comes to desserts. And as far as the structure goes, in reality, it's a little dense. That's the thing with almond flour. It's always going to be a little dense.
So it's exactly the opposite of what I said it was.
I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry.
Well, anyway, go ahead.
It's a little dense. And we'll see how it turns out. I didn't have any baking soda, which we need to put that on the list. I use baking powder instead.
I thought those were like two radically different things.
They're not. In fact, the baking powder that I have has baking soda in it.
Whoa.
It's like
okay.
The Whole Foods. It's just a rising agent.
Well, let's try this out. Why don't you go ahead and dip in and take the first bite?
I'll
fill the dead air just by making noises with my mouth.
No, don't do it. Don't do it for Kelly.
Yeah, I want to dig into this too. It looks wonderful cutting into it.
Okay.
That's a good cake.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Good job, Rachel.
Good job, Rachel. You know, it's interesting because we had Phil and Cammie on,
mm-hmm.
And they're actually coming over in a little while. They're going to eat this cake with us.
Mm-hmm.
We had them on for episode 4.
Uh-huh.
And they said something that blew my mind, which is that they prefer cake over pie.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is why you made this, or what inspired you to make a cake in the first place, right?
Yeah, it was for Phil.
Yeah. But what kind of a person, I mean, we're not going to say this behind their backs, like, we're going to tell them this in person, too. Like, what kind of a fucked up person likes cake over pie? That's ridiculous.
I like them equally. I feel like...
What kind of a fucked up person are you?
I like, for different situations, it's all about context. Like, for Thanksgiving, I don't want cake. I want a flaky, crusted apple pie that's just, like, oozing.
Yeah.
And one of the things that my mom used to do is put a piece of cheddar cheese over it. And it's delicious.
Yeah, I've heard that. I think it was in a movie or something where somebody said they did that. And that sounds weird, but I can imagine. Is it, like, American cheese or... What kind of cheese?
Cheddar.
Cheddar cheese?
I said cheddar.
Oh, you did? I just heard cheese.
Yeah, cheddar cheese.
Cheddar cheese.
Sharp cheddar cheese. Sharp cheddar. So good.
Yeah, I've still never tried it. I would love to try that sometime because it sounds intriguing and weird.
It's hard to make low carb pie crust, though.
Yeah. I really love... So, one of the things about cake, at least for me, is like the actual cake itself, I don't really care that much about. It's more of like a carrier... For the frosting.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be a good balance, I think. Because you can't have too much frosting, otherwise you're just eating frosting with a spoon.
How do you feel about the balance here?
I think it's good. I think it's really good. And actually, I like, because I love this frosting.
Mm-hmm.
I got to lick the beaters earlier, which was always my favorite part of baking.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like they go really well together, and the structure of this cake, along with the flavor of the frosting... Like, it just gives texture to, it's kind of like a canvas to paint the frosting onto, in my opinion.
It is, but I actually really do like the cake part. I think it's not as dense as I thought it was. It's lighter than it looks. And I think that's because, again, of the large pans. It's good. I like it. And I put some flax in there, too, for some absorbency and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looked like poppy seeds when it was going in the oven.
Yeah, but the flax helps absorb some moisture and give better texture to the cake.
But so if we wanted this to be a little more yellow for our yellow cake,
mm-hmm.
you said something about food coloring. Is that what pretty much all that could be done? Or was there maybe like if we add more eggs to like cover for the lack of sugar? I'm just throwing things out there because I'm a dum-dum. I'm a cooking dum-dum.
No, don't add more eggs. Let me repeat that. Don't add more eggs. It'll change the texture of the cake completely. It may not even bind well.
Hmm.
Just add a drop or two of yellow food coloring if you are really married to it being more yellow.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because we called it yellow cake. This is a not yellow yellow cake, but it is a delicious not yellow yellow cake.
It tastes like childhood to me, like the frosting in particular.
Yeah, it's... I mean, just the chocolate flavor itself used, cacao powder?
Uh-huh,
We've been using that as opposed to cocoa powder recently.
Yeah, and I actually like it a little bit better, I think. I like the texture of it better. I think it's smoother. I think it's a little bit less acidic, and...
It looks a little lighter, like when you use it. I don't know if a powder can be lighter than another powder. But.
It is. It is lighter, and I'm amazed that you noticed that, Mr. Colorblind, because... I didn't mean
in color, I meant in weight.
Oh.
Yeah, I have no idea. The colors look exactly the same.
I was going to say, that's so weird. You can't even tell whenever I have a rash. She's just like, I don't see anything.
Yeah, Rachel can be sunburned, beyond belief, and unless she's got, like, festering blisters all over her body, I'm not going to notice.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, along with that talk of festering blisters, let's finish off this cake, and then we'll come back and talk about the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
So today's movie, are you ready for this, Rachel? Are you nervous?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Not really, but a little bit. Because
you're wondering how we're going to spend our next hour and a half to potentially 3 hours?
My God, it better not be a 3-hour one, because you'll never get to watch that Dream Theater DVD.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
So today's movie is Men in Black.
That movie
starring Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, I'm glad you picked that one. That's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of curious because I think this one might be interesting because I know that we both enjoy this movie, or at least have enjoyed it in the past. But I'm curious, since we're talking about it in terms of gender and race, since Will Smith is the main character, and he's black, so I kind of want to see how he's treated in this movie through the lens.
I'm more interested in Selma Blair.
You know what? It's not Selma Blair.
God damn it.
But, speaking of, I guess we should tell the audience that the reason that you have a Selma Blair thing right now. Yeah, because we were watching Cruel Intentions the other night.
Yeah, sometimes we have themed movie nights where, like, we'll set up a theme, and the theme for this past Friday it was? Yeah, it was Friday.
Yeah, Friday.
Friday night, we were like, let's watch a movie that we weren't supposed to watch, but we watched anyway, because we were both raised in highly religious and conservative households.
Yeah.
And so mine was Cruel Intentions.
Which has Selma Blair in it.
Yeah.
Who we realized we both had crushes on her.
Seems to be happening a lot.
Yeah, we're finding that out quite a bit.
Yeah, I like Selma Blair in that.
And that movie was not bad. I kind of wish we had podcasted it, because, like, it's definitely got some severe problems.
Sure.
But it was, like, I was laser-locked, focused, and engaged with that movie for the entire hour and 40 minutes, or however long it was.
And most of it, and you know, it's based on a novel about French peasants, right?
Yeah.
And they just redid it with teenagers.
And so, for my movie, it was stupid. I picked Valentine, which is a slasher movie from the turn of the millennium.
Tell them why.
With David Boreanaz. And the reason was because it came out when I was like 14 years old.
Yeah.
And me and my friends had a sleepover at somebody's house who actually had pay-per-view, which was like odd at the time.
Uh-huh.
And they said that we could rent one movie. And we saw that Denise Richards was in Valentine, so we're like, oh, we're definitely going to get to see some boobs in this movie.
What other movie had you seen Denise Richards' boobs in prior to this one?
You know what? None.
You little assumptive bastards.
I know. It is. It was stupid. But when you're horny and you have an opportunity like this, you try and make the best decision you can.
Based on
the information that you have.
No evidence.
Well, I mean, it had provocatively dressed and seductive women on the cover.
Oh, okay.
And it was rated R. Like, what are we supposed to think? Like, we're going to get to see some boobies in this movie. So we run it. If you've ever seen this horrible movie, it's like a porn without the porn.
Yeah, there's no nudity in it except for in the background on a television screen.
And the acting is just piss poor.
Yeah.
The story is ludicrous.
I said that in that movie. I just said, this is piss poor. In my very, like, Central Louisiana accent. Piss poor.
Yeah.
What fool made this? And Jordan just thought piss poor was the best.
Yeah. But anyway, we did enjoy Cruel Intentions, which has Selma Blair. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about Men in Black, which, if you remember, Rachel, which does not have Selma Blair in it. It's a woman named Linda Fiorentino.
Fiorentino, huh?
Yeah. And the only other thing that I know her from is Dogma, that Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, yeah. I hate Kevin Smith.
And she's, like, somewhat of a main character in that movie also. So she kind of had this, like, time period, like, right here in between, like, 1997 and 2000, where she was, like, in some things.
Oh.
But I remember also having a huge crush on Linda Fiorentino when I saw Men in Black.
Yeah.
Was that the same for you as well?
Men in Black, when was it released?
Around, like, 97. I didn't look it up. It's somewhere right around there, though.
It was a little... Late 90s. The first time I saw it, it was, like, a little pre-me knowing what I was interested in, like, pre-crushes.
Sure. Did you see it in the theater?
No. I saw it afterwards. My dad didn't let me see it until I was, like, 13, I think. Maybe 12.
Well, it is rated PG-13, so he was following the MPAA guidance.
That can't be right, because I was having funny feelings about women. I don't know. I just wasn't attracted to her, I think, is the short answer.
That's so strange, because I think she does look a lot like Selma Blair, but just not as tired.
But maybe I like tired women.
Maybe that's the thing. Well, we did talk about how we like Selma Blair's tired eyes.
So. No, you talked about how you like Selma Blair's tired eyes.
Oh, I thought you were like, I concur.
No, I said I liked her tiny boobs.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So there.
Yeah, checkmate. So, oh, you like that, huh? So, when was I mean, you said the first time you saw it, you don't really remember. It was a, but you saw it on DVD or video, I guess.
Yeah, DVD.
And how did this movie make you feel at the time? Or how old were you? You said like 13?
I had to have been like 11 or 12, actually.
Okay.
The first time I saw this movie, I was so into, at this age, I was reading so much science fiction and so much. Sure. I was reading Robert Heinlein.
Yeah.
At fucking 12. Not acceptable parents. No wonder I turned out the way I did. I was reading Stranger in a Strange Land. And at the time I saw this movie, I may have been like 12, 13. And the opening sequence has like featuring Rip Torn in it. And like after it splats on the windshield with the giant dragonfly. And I remember just being like, this is fucking great. I love this so much. I love anyone named Rip Torn.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait to see this movie. And the part that I love the most in this movie is the part when Edgar, the guy, the cockroach that inhabits the man suit,
yeah,
like comes out of the spaceship wreckage.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he goes, "Give me sugar and water." And I just thought it was the best. And I liked Vincent D'Onofrio a lot.
Yeah, we both like Vincent D'Onofrio quite a bit. Because we both love Full Metal Jacket, which he is excellent in, an amazing movie. I would say that's definitely in our top 10 somewhere.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But so it's funny that you mentioned Rip Torn, because Rip Torn was one of those people when I was a kid. I guess, well, yeah. So Rip Torn was always like a crotchety old man character when I was a kid. But I always felt like, okay, you know, he's still approachable, blah, blah, blah. You know, we find out later, Rip Torn likes to get, you know, fucked up on booze and go out and, like, rob banks naked. He actually got arrested for that.
That's right.
he is just a batshit crazy person.
Everybody's wondering why millennials turned out the way we did.
Yeah.
Rip Torn, it's Rip Torn's fault.
Oh, that's it? We can pin the blame on Rip Torn.
That's right.
I mean, he was also in Freddy Got Fingered, so get as much blame as we can lump onto him.
Which I am going to make a brief comment about Freddy Got Fingered, because you can't just drop that and then leave it.
I was setting you up for the spike.
Thank you. So, Red Letter Media talked a little bit about...
this is a YouTube site that we like that does Half in the Bag, which is a review series, and then, like, a review where they look at, like, older movies. And Freddy Got Fingered was one of them.
And who's the big one? Which one's the big one?
Mike, I think is his name. Yeah.
Me and Mike have the exact same conclusion that I've had since college, which is Freddy Got Fingered is secret genius.
Yeah, so Rachel's been telling me for years that Freddy Got Fingered is a secret genius movie. And so it's a movie starring Tom Green, and it's absurd and disgusting and vile. But at the same time, Rachel was 100% right. Freddy Got Fingered is a secret genius movie. And we'll actually have to save that for a future episode, special episode.
Yes!
Where you can talk about it, since that was a formative movie for you in a lot of ways.
Yes.
In terms of, like, gross-out comedies.
Well, gross-out, Gonzo, Body Shock, like, all that cool stuff that is just, like, so subversive. Because as far as mainstream Hollywood, I loved it. And that's the feeling I get from Men in Black a lot. It's kind of subversive in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And I love that about it.
Interested because I'm not sure that I know exactly what you mean when you say that it's subversive. So I'm interested to see in the movie and like kind of watch for that. Because I've never had that feeling associated with this movie.
Really?
For me, this movie has been like just pure fun from the beginning.
It is fun.
But also very scary. So, like, I saw this movie when I was, I think, maybe, like, 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah, we were about the same age.
It was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first PG-13 movies that I saw in the theater.
Your parents like, allowed with you friends. To see it?
Yeah, they did. And I remember I saw it with a bunch of friends, and it was for somebody's birthday party. And then we went to Barton Springs Pool afterwards.
Oh,
which
you did?
In Austin, yeah. But being in the pool was not a good idea for me at the time because I was so terrified of the bug, the villain that like rips out of Vincent D'Onofrio's skin at the end of this movie. that I was seeing it everywhere. Like,
you hate bugs.
Well, yeah, but I especially hate, like, you know, two-story man-eating bugs that can crawl into people's skin and live there and, like, no one be the wiser. Like, that's terrifying to me as well. Like, you know, there's a little bit of, like, comical body horror in this movie, if you know what I mean.
I mentioned the body horror and the body shock.
Yeah.
Which I love, and I love to this day. Thanks, Cronenberg. But it's really funny because I grew up in a rural setting on a farm.
Sure.
And I've seen botfly larvae, and I've seen, like, maggots, and I just saw it so much when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That this didn't bother me very much.
Yeah, I guess for you, you would see, you know, bloody and traumatic things on the farm quite a bit.
Well, I was like in the woods mostly. The woods is where the drama of horror plays out.
That's where life is its cruelest, I suppose.
I have so many disgusting stories involving possums.
We'll have to make a separate podcast for your disgusting possum stories. That's a great name for it just right there.
Disgusting
possum stories with Rachel Smith.
You get exactly what you pay for.
Yeah. It's short, to the point, and we know exactly what we're going to get. Disgusting possum stories. But yeah, so this movie really scared me pretty bad when I was a kid. This kind of thing, Jurassic Park also scared me. We'll talk about that when we eventually review that movie. But at the same time, I did absolutely have a blast watching this movie, and I loved, at the time, I don't know if this was, I don't think I've ever really thought of Will Smith as being like a non-white actor. Like, to me, he's just an actor. Like, I know that sounds really dumb, like, oh, I don't see color. That's not true. I really do. But with Will Smith, it's a little different, because I feel like he, like, somehow broke some kind of a barrier, like, way before everyone else did, and just, like, existed in Hollywood for decades while other people didn't.
I think there's a little bit more problematic underlyings there.
Well, sure, yeah, tell me about it.
More that Will Smith, I'm going to say, excluding Fresh Prince, because Fresh Prince was complicated and interesting and dealt with Will Smith as an inner city young man of color.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But excluding that, I feel like Hollywood casts Will Smith as the quote-unquote non-threatening black guy. And that's why... I think that's more the reason why he seems transcendent across racial boundaries.
Yeah, I suppose so. I guess I've never really thought about it that way. But I do get the transcendent part, because I feel like he kind of transcends movies in general, because like, when you see a Will Smith movie, it's very different from seeing any other movie. Like, a Will Smith movie is, like, its own unique genre, almost.
I mean, let's think about Hitch and...
I know, but in almost all of these movies, like, Will Smith is being Will Smith in, like, different roles and situations. Like, it's...
You think he was Will Smith in I Am Legend?
I do. I think that Will Smith had matured at that point. Because people change over time. But I feel like when you watch a Will Smith movie, it's similar to when you're watching, like, I don't know, there are certain actors that only play themselves. I feel like Dustin Hoffman is an actor that's like that. It turns out he's an asshole. But, you know, there are people like Robert De Niro stopped playing other roles a long time ago and just became old man De Niro.
It's kind of sad.
In every movie. So when you see a movie like that with one of these like A-list stars who really is kind of not really acting, but just acting as themselves in different situations.
Sure.
I feel like that's a little bit different.
Yeah. I would say I would add Kiefer Sutherland to that list.
Yes, our pirate friend Kiefer Sutherland. If you guys haven't seen it, there's a hilarious video of... Oh, is that what he says? He's a vampire?
No, he does say he's a pirate, but I'm talking about his role in The Lost Boys.
Yeah. Oh, right, right. There's a hilarious YouTube video where Kiefer Sutherland is drunk in a mall and says something like, I'm a pirate, and then like jumps onto a ginormous Christmas tree and topples the whole thing. Google it, because it really is worth watching.
I'm a pirate. Or something.
Yeah. Something like that.
It's amazing. Jordan has this amazing way of describing things that makes them sound funnier than they actually are. But,
yeah,
I mean, he has described at least 18 Seinfeld episodes to me. And I'm like, those do sound hilarious. And then we watch them and they're not as funny.
Yeah. We've discussed this, but Seinfeld kind of had its time. I don't feel like it aged very well, but at the time it was like a genius show.
Those are my people too. I should be supporting them.
Yeah, you are. I'm surprised they don't like throw you out of family reunions for these views that you have.
If I ever went.
Yeah, apostate.
Except for Larry David is a genius. All right, I'm done. Talk about Men in Black.
Yeah, we ended up talking about a lot of different movies in this intro here. So Rachel, it sounded like you had pleasant view of this movie from before.
Yeah.
How do you think it's going to make you feel this time around?
I think I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it again. There is one part that scared me, and that's the part when Will Smith is talking to Selma Blair.
Linda Fiorentino.
Who?
Linda Fiorentino.
Linda Fiorentino. He's talking to her, and the Vincent D'Onofrio is crouched under her examination table.
Right.
And is holding onto her ankle.
Yeah, I think I was actually specifically thinking about that scene when I picked this movie. I don't want to go too much into it now because I kind of want to discuss the whether or not it's problematic and what you think about it later on. Because it is, yeah. You know, and your fears, I think, are justified.
And I think it's going to drag on the back end.
You think so?
I do.
I remember being thrilled the whole way through. I think that I'm going to be entertained. I'm going to disagree on that one.
Okay.
At least up front. I think that the whole movie will keep my interest, as it has many times before. And
who plays Edgar's wife? What's her name?
I do not know that actress's name, but she is hilarious. So she's the same person who was the bus driver in Forrest Gump.
She's too good for all this.
Yeah, she is. She's a minor character actor, and I'm ashamed that I don't know her name, because that's like something that I pride myself on. But I'll look it up. She was Dorothy Harris in Forrest Gump.
Never talking about that movie ever again.
I think she steals the scene in every movie that she's in.
I do too. I think she's so fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see that. I think I'm gonna be entertained all the way through. I think that you have a surprise on your face, it looks like?
I want to talk about creature effects.
Oh, yeah. Do we want to talk about it right now, or
Can I just say that's something that I love and that I've always loved, and that's the only reason I'll ever watch Star Wars is to watch the little creatures. Like, I love creatures.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different, like, aliens, and you've always liked that about certain sci-fi. And Mass Effect, yeah, is it? There are lots of different alien species, and especially in this movie, I like that there are like super weird ones that aren't humanoid.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about that later on. But there is a lot of CG in this movie too.
And I bet it doesn't age super great.
I don't know. I remember last time watching it thinking like, oh, this isn't so bad. But I'll be interested to see what we think about it today. Because this movie is like 20 years old.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, I know.
I'm old!
It's crazy. But I can't wait to see it. We'll talk about it, I think, through the lens that we view movies on this podcast. I think that we are going to run into some issues, and I think it'll be interesting to talk about, since, of course, we both love Tommy Lee Jones, though. We should get that out of the way. Tommy Lee Jones is the, like, greatest person ever.
Can I tell a Tommy Lee Jones story?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. I don't know why I'm asking so much permission today instead of just rudely interrupting.
Be a man.
Like a strumpet. So I had a professor in college. His name was Dr. Don Graham. He was amazing. One of the best professors I've ever had in my life. Shout out to Dr. Graham.
Sure.
Who taught a Southwestern Lit course that I took. And it was an incredible class. And he told this story about, I can't remember if it was him or maybe it was a reporter from Texas Monthly, but I think it was him. I don't remember. I mean, there's a vast difference there, but, and maybe one of his friends, probably one of his friends, actually, like, went on a long truck ride with Tommy Lee Jones out to his ranch because he was going to interview him.
Yeah.
And he wanted to... I remember the story. It was a Texas Monthly reporter. And he started to... He was talking to him, and all Tommy Lee Jones wanted to talk about was his project that he was working on, his directorial project, The Three Barrels of Malkiatis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And...
Another movie that we both love.
I love that movie. And so he's talking to this reporter, and the reporter is just like, yeah, but what about your marriage? And Tommy Lee Jones, this is in, like, around the Austin area, like, in central Texas. Tommy Lee Jones stops his truck. Oh, by the way, Tommy Lee Jones is drinking beer as he drives.
Oh, Jesus.
stops his truck and kicks the reporter out in the middle of nowhere and drives off. And you know what Dr. Graham's moral was?
What's that?
He was like, if Texas Monthly had hired me, I would have asked him about the Three Burials of Malkiatis.
Oh, Jesus.
He was just the best.
Wow. So that wasn't really a Tommy Lee Jones story as much as a Dr. Don Graham story.
No, because Tommy Lee Jones kicked that guy out in the middle of nowhere, yeah, and drove off.
But I love how that professor kind of brought it back to, like,
yeah,
I should have been hired there, but instead I'm forced to work here at this university teaching you idiots.
No, he wasn't. That's not what it was like. He was just like, he absolutely was one of those people who deserved to be able to write that article, and they chose some fucking jerk off instead, yeah, of him. Ugh.
Well, that's what, I mean, that's life.
No, fuck off, Tommy Wiseau.
That's life. So yeah, I think I'm ready to get started on this movie. I've been excited to watch it all week, so... I think we'll take a break. Does that sound good?
Sounds
Come
good
back
to
me. After we watch Men in Black.
Men in Black.
Yeah. I noticed that the movie was a very nice length at an hour and a half.
Yep.
You like the shorter movies.
I do.
Especially.
I don't believe that there are any stories that need to be told in over 2 hours, and 2 hours is pushing it.
Yeah.
That's my philosophy.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, I give a little bit more leeway than that, I think. Like, when we get to a three-hour movie, then it really needs to justify being 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And there are a few movies that do that. But this movie, yeah, it's short, sweet, and to the point.
It is.
So, yeah, I mean, let's start talking about kind of the background of this movie. It's you notice that it's based on a Marvel comic book.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, and I have to confess, I haven't read the comic books. I haven't ever really even seen one. So,
really?
Yeah. From what I understand, I think it was kind of like a niche audience when it was released as a comic book.
I believe that.
Somebody just caught wind of it and was like, hey, you know, this is a neat idea for a movie. But it's directed by Barry Sonnenfeld.
Who dat?
Yeah, you might remember we watched a movie with John Travolta called Get Shorty.
Uh-huh.
He directed that. He directed a few other things that are like that. Normally, like, action comedies or comedy drama. Dramedies,
okay.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But how did you feel about the way this movie felt under his direction?
It was capable and not too clever, and it progressed well. It didn't stall. It stalled out in a couple places, but I think that I don't know.
What places were those for you?
In the middle, it kind of stalls out for me after he kills the little bitty aliens.
Called. The bug. Vincent D'Onofrio kills the two guys in the diner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it drags a little bit for me. And there's a lot of like, we're gonna go get guns, kind of. And I know it's like a crucial part, the arming of the hero or whatever, but it felt forced and excessive for me.
For me, I think I like the entirety of the movie. The part after the two guys get killed in the diner, like, kind of sets up that scene where they're investigating the bodies in the morgue. And I always thought that part was really neat.
I like the part in the cafe, and I like that part when it's set up in the morgue. I don't like the part in between that where he's like, the bug is like running around wreaking Hatton on Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. And so they go to try and find him at the jewelry store.
And they have to chase him all over the place. I don't like that part.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. And I can see that. I mean, you're not big on action. And honestly, this movie doesn't have a ton of action in it.
True.
It's really more just like a sci-fi comedy in a lot of ways. Except obviously at the end, there's several large explosions and guns and stuff. But that's really only like the last 20-30 minutes of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that worked well that it was used sparingly. And even those action scenes, like most of them are used to deliver, you know, some kind of information to the audience or progress their investigation in some way.
Right.
And so I do think that, you know, if you're going to have action in your movie, you better have it there for a purpose other than just explosions.
Exploded.
Yeah. But I like this movie felt intelligent and, we talk about tonal consistency. I think this movie has it down to a T.
It does. And, like, it shows that movies can be funny while, like, avoiding bathos.
Yeah. I mean, it's within... I mean, Will Smith's character... I guess we can start talking about the cast now because we both really like most of the cast in this movie, right? So, yeah, Will Smith's character is pretty well fleshed out. I mean, he's...
He is.
You mentioned he's a little reckless.
Yeah.
He also has... a lot of swagger. He's resistant to authority. Kind of does things his own way. Mm-hmm. But he also grows as a person by being in the presence of Tommy Lee Jones.
Right.
Who's more cynical and by the book.
Right.
What do you think about Tommy Lee Jones' character in this movie? His performance.
I adored both of them. I adore Tommy Lee Jones, so it's not really fair. I really do love him.
Right.
But... I thought his performance was spot on. I thought it was a perfect role for him. It could have been written for him.
Yeah.
And he brought something to it that I don't think another old white G-man type actor could.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of like a good example. Maybe...
like a Clint Eastwood type craggy faced person or...
No. More like a cop.
Oh, okay.
More like an authority figure, like the smoking man in the X-Files.
Oh, sure.
Like, Tommy Lee Jones just brought something to it that an actor like that couldn't.
Right. Because, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones does have the dramatic chops to handle, pretty much every movie he's in.
Yeah.
But I really like seeing him in this movie where it is very humor-based. It's nice to kind of see him... be funny, in his like deadpan, serious agent man way. Yeah. we mentioned hearing him like say or speak technobabble with like such speed and like banality that it kind of makes it interesting.
It was great. He's like, "You sold an ionizing carburetor to an unregistered cephalopoid."
Yeah,
piece of shit.
Yeah, because ultimately, I mean, this movie kind of is like an origin story or an introduction to a universe that we're not familiar with.
Right.
And so I think I think Tommy Lee Jones is a great choice because he lends a lot of credibility to the fact that, you know, that universe really does exist. Here's here's a person who's lived in it for a long time, and he's just tired to have to track down another reverberating carbonizer that was sold to an unlicensed cephalopoid.
I mean, we talked about this, they're basically immigration officers.
Yeah.
They're basically like, they have to go track down their cases and their clients and the people who they've been on their case for a long time, and they're like, Reggie, you piece of shit. Yeah. Why are you doing this? Come on. Do you want to stay on Earth?
Exactly. But speaking of immigration officers, when you first saw this movie when you were a kid, did you understand at all what was going on in the opening scene? Because I did not when I first saw it.
I had a faint inkling, but not really.
Yeah. So after the cool credit sequence that you mentioned you liked that credit sequence quite a bit. Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite is working as a coyote, transporting a bunch of illegal aliens into America, supposedly somewhere in the Southwest, it looks like, by the terrain.
It would have to be the Southwest.
Yeah, but I mean I guess I meant Arizona or something.
Yeah.
Instead of California, I don't count that as Southwest. California is its own thing.
Sure.
And Texas is its own thing. And everything in between is the Southwest.
Oh, okay. All right. I forgot you're a Texan and this is a thing.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not. But anyway. I had no idea that that was what was going on. Was it illegal immigrants were being transported? The implications of that? What that means?
I'm really surprised that your dad didn't talk to you about that.
Yeah, you know what my dad did talk to me about, though? Was he's like, oh, Tommy Lee Jones' Spanish is actually pretty good there.
Yeah. Jordan's dad is half Mexican.
Yeah. And that makes me a quarter Mexican. That was my first kind of introduction to the issue of illegal immigration. And I like that this movie, Tommy Lee Jones, maybe this set in with me later on, but that, Tommy Lee Jones is compassionate to these people and just lets them all go. Despite the American immigration officers' protests.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? What stood out to you in that scene?
I really love how humane it was. The whole thing was humane, and he was even humane to that hideous alien.
Yeah, up until a point.
Up until a point. He was pretty... he was like, you don't understand a word I'm saying in Spanish.
But, that kind of makes me wonder, too, because he's really compassionate to the human illegal aliens, but then he's, kind of a dick to this illegal alien, who's, an actual alien from another planet.
Well, he is, but we get background later that alien... He and that alien have been going toe-to-toe for, ever.
It's true, yeah. He knows of him and he's a known troublemaker, I guess.
Mikey, where are you going, bud? What are we doing?
Yeah.
And I feel that way with my students too. After you work with somebody and they just won't help themselves.
Yeah.
You're just Mikey, what are you doing, buddy?
I wasted all this time on you. Yeah. Come on, man.
So he's honestly pretty humane to everybody.
Yeah, he is, and I liked, too, this really settled in deep when I was a kid, that, at no point did he pull a gun on this creature up until, mm-hmm. He absolutely had to and, somebody was gonna die. He was trying to resolve the entire situation by just talking to this being, and, who knows where it would have gone after that, but it sounded everything was friendly and they were gonna, go back to the station, work it out, until the... idiot immigration dude pops up over the hill and is oh my god, what the fuck.
Yeah
So I thought that was something that I thought was interesting. It was just a different way to solve problems, especially for somebody who has such a cool gun.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I mentioned, I was like, law enforcement should watch Men in Black.
Yeah, you did at the time. You're that's how you should treat people.
It's like you should treat people even if they look like monsters to you. Nothing looks more like a monster than that thing with giant fangs and, slavering jaws.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that about... because we talked about... While we were watching the movie, we talked about some of the themes in this movie.
Yeah.
One of the ones I noticed was that most of the characters are taught or just inherently do show empathy towards other creatures, regardless of what they look like or how monstrous they are,
mm-hmm.
Or disgusting or even dangerous that they are. What was one that you noticed?
Which alien?
Well, you know what? While we're on the topic, what aliens did you notice that you remember that you liked?
I like the giant translucent worm that Tommy Lee Jones calls Grumpy.
Yeah, he's grumpy.
And I like the one that has eyeballs on its back and it's walking on all fours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some interesting alien designs in this.
I like the little bitty guys, too. They're cute. But I really like the character design for Reggie. No, not Reggie. Yeah, Reggie. Reggie's the one who's that Tony Shalhoub plays.
Oh, what is that character's name? Jeeves.
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 Jeeves with a
Jeeves?
B.
Jeeves? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, Jeeves.
Who's Reggie?
Reggie is the guy who's, like, trying to escape, and his squid wife has a squid baby.
That's right. Yeah. And I like the squid baby. It was so cute.
The squid baby is cute, and it's a practical effect, and yeah. It shows. Like, it feels extremely real.
Oh, I love the squid baby.
So I like that you want to talk about the different creatures and the animals and everything, but what I was asking was what themes in the movie, because I was mentioning how characters are taught to show empathy uh-huh. to unexpected recipients, and what were some of the ones you noticed? Because we noticed a few, like, morals and values that we really liked in this movie.
Yeah, I think one of the ones that I really liked was, no matter how monstrous a being looked or acted, it had a purpose for its actions.
Yeah.
Like, even the Roach, the Vincent D'Onofrio character, like, sure. He's trying to take care of 78 million kids.
Yeah, like, he's not evil.
No.
I mean, maybe he's doing bad things, but he has a reason for doing it.
Right.
It's just the wrong thing to do.
It is. And I like that. And I like the pieces about memory and consciousness.
Yeah, they debate a few times. Like, I mean, it's done in a humorous way, but they kind of debate whether or not it's okay to be constantly
erasing
people's memory. And, like, what kind of compassion should you show them after the fact?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, if they have no memory, does it matter how I acted? Well, maybe it does to the people who do remember.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess. Yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, there was a lot of complexity in there, and I really liked that. And one of the other themes, there's a lot of, like, kind of neat old cowboy themes in this
movie.
Sure,
yeah. You mentioned, like, the passing of the torch.
Yeah, the changing of the guard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
And, yeah, because, like, the movie opens and closes with somebody mm-hmm. literally passing the neuralizer to the memory wipe machine to the next person.
And, like, the elder mentor departing, like Shane.
Yeah.
And even at the very beginning, it's so cowboyish because they're sitting in the desert and the old guy looks up at the stars and he's like, they're beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it sounds like something you'd hear in a Western.
It is.
And it's like a really neat... I've always loved Westerns. One, because I love horses. That is the number one reason. Number two, because it's a really interesting exploration of masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it mean to be alone with only men for months at a time on the range? Like,
yeah.
What does that mean for your sexuality? And what does that mean for the way that you interact with other men and how you treat women once you encounter them? Like,
sure.
Westerns are a really, like, fecund place for speculation on those sort of things. And Men in Black follows kind of a neat tradition. I would say it follows the structure of a Western.
Yeah. There's, I think it's interesting you say that because, like, at the beginning when, I think his name is D, is the older agent who looks kind of like Stan Lee.
He does look like Stan Lee.
Like a young Stan Lee. Literally passes the the neuralizer to Tommy Lee Jones, and they're in a Western setting, like in the desert by the cacti.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, just it just evokes that, not just the thematic memory of a Western, but literally the visuals as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. That's what I was talking about at the beginning. When they were in the Southwestern setting, and they're looking up at the stars.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just wanted to clarify because they do that at the end too, mm-hmm. In a city setting.
Yep.
But we talked about, I guess I didn't mention this during the movie, but, you know, it follows a lot of the themes of, like, pattern of a buddy cop movie, like a Lethal Weapon or something like that, in that, you know, you got two opposites that are have to work together for whatever reason. I really like this version of that. Because the personalities of the two main characters in Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith are so very different,
mm-hmm.
but, and both of them are kind of shown as appealing in their own ways, but they also, you see the drawbacks of each, and they each kind of grow on each other, or grow with each other, learning from each other and like kind of swapping valuable traits that they have.
Sure.
Like Tommy Lee Jones is a cynic who is just like, you know, doesn't really get excited about anything anymore. Will Smith is an idealist mm-hmm. and an optimist, and like they both kind of help each other realize that neither way on its own is great, but they kind of grow towards each other in the middle.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
Yeah, I would say that's true. That's all true.
What do you think of the special effects in this movie?
A lot of times they really, really worked for me. The practical effects worked really, really well for me. Like the squid baby worked well.
Yeah.
They did some, it looks like some stop motion, maybe, and maybe puppeteering stuff whenever Jeeves' head got blown off.
Yeah, well, I think that was CG when it grew back. When it got actually blown off, I think it could have been like a mannequin with a balloon head or something.
No, not that. When it was growing back, the first part of it, I think it was mixed practical and CG.
Oh, yeah, like they were switching back yeah. and forth. Yeah, I wonder, because it was really hard to tell at some points.
Which like, is the way that CG should be used. If any Hollywood execs are listening to me, stop fucking using so much CG. It'll never look real because it's not real, and our brains are too smart for that. Like, stop doing it. Hire some makeup artists and some animatronics people and fucking get to work.
Yeah, because, I mean, for the most part, when it's not pure CG,
yeah.
this movie's effects hold up pretty well. Mm-hmm. But when it does go full CG, you notice some ones that didn't look yeah. so great.
The spaceship's taken off didn't look great.
Yeah, at the end from the World's Fair. The bug himself, I didn't think looked all that great. It didn't age all that well because it wasn't real at all. Like there was no element to it.
Which is a shame because there were some really great makeup features with Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah. Oh man, and the verisimilitude of like
the skin rotting off.
Yeah, noticed that like over time throughout the movie, like the skin keeps decaying, and because I mean, there's nothing living attached to it, so it's just like
this
rotting
is so gross,
peeling, and is really nasty, but it worked really well. Trying to think of some of the other stuff, I loved a lot of the design elements of this movie.
Sure, I did too.
I thought like the gadgetry and the tech, even like the alien technology and everything, like had a neat and cohesive design.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of like maybe like that 50s and 60s alien aesthetic in a lot of ways, but like a little bit darker, where you have like round flying saucers and very conventional like little gray men type origins. Where
sure, even though the Aurelian battleship looked like a fucking doomsday machine with all its jagged corners and shit.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's differences, but for the most part, like, a lot of things are they're very sleek and rounded and, like, almost retro-looking in some ways.
Kind of Art Deco-y.
Yeah, and so I think that's a good point you bring up that battle cruiser at the end that's all sharp and jaggedy, because that it's a different take on the technology from almost the whole rest of the movie. So, like, something like that looks much more military and it feels much more threatening than, say, like, the noisy cricket gun that he has that's, like, a tiny little water pistol-looking thing.
Right.
So, yeah, I think maybe they did that on purpose to kind of invoke that sense of dread.
Yeah, and, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that they did in this movie overall that was just elegant. I mean, that's the word that I would use to describe it. It was simple in its design, and it was elegant, and it worked. And, like, why fuck with it if it works so well? I don't know why people do. But it's just, like, the plots, the subplots were easy to follow. They were linear. Like, sure. A happened, B happened. As a result, C happened. Call back to A. It worked.
Yeah.
Like, but they played within a lot of the traditional structures and like added fun CG and alien effects.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It was really cool.
It is, I mean, going back to the fact that they're basically immigration agents, like, it is kind of like, that's one of the things I really like about this movie is how they find humor naturally in the absurdity of this situation where you're doing, like, a menial task in, like, an outrageous environment.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, I mean, like, Tommy Lee Jones, he's just trying to, like, check this guy's papers, and then there's, like, and, yeah. you know, deliver a baby, and, Will Smith's getting, like, thrown around by a huge tentacle, like,
yeah.
just another day on the job.
Yeah.
And that's just funny on its own.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that I really like about, there's a lot of different, we talked about, like, values and themes that go on in this movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, we noticed a lot of things about, Will Smith's character and how he kind of the values that he holds and
yeah.
the example he kind of sets as a role model, especially for like young kids that are watching this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of things that we both noticed we internalized from this movie that
sure.
One scene in particular was when he's invited to show up at the Men in Black headquarters and like take those tests with the other soldiers and stuff. Like, what was it? You noticed something about how he acts around everybody else who's very like, sir, yes, sir. You know, we're gonna.
Oh, he's. What did I say? I can't remember.
I think you mentioned that, like, he questions authority quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. He questions authority all the time. Like, that other guy that. Stood up and was like, we're here because we're the best of the best of the best, sir.
Yeah.
And, like, Will Smith's character is like, you know, this guy over here, the best of the best of the best, sir, with an honors. Like,
yeah.
with such derision to organization and conformity and authority.
Yeah, and it was something that, like, I kind of took to heart over the years. Because, like, Will Smith's character is brash and reckless and, like, a little bit... immature,
yeah,
but he is also like a critical thinker, and it's rewarded in this movie.
Yeah,
like one of the things we both liked is that Will Smith's character earns everything that he gets.
Yeah,
like he is one of the best cops on the force, and like is in good enough shape that he can chase down this what's a cephalopoid?
Yeah,
on foot. So, like, he is impressive. Like, he's a person who deserves to, like, have this cool job. But then so he's held up as our hero and the example to follow. But he also, like, won't take anything at face value. He doesn't just do something because someone tells him to. Like, he's going to question mm-hmm. it and think it over and over in his head and make sure that, you know, he's making the right move or doing the right thing.
Right.
And that's something that's been important to me, since before I saw this movie, but this is one of the, you know, drops in the bucket that really hammered it home for me.
Yeah.
I'm mixing several metaphors.
I know. So I was just thinking to you about that. Yeah, I just poured the coffee on the dog and did a diddly dance. What?
I have never heard that saying. The diddly dance? What is this? This must be a backwoods country folk thing I haven't heard before.
I told her to get on the choo-choo, and
yeah,
there it was. All right, I'm done.
Those are not sayings. Those are not sayings.
Neither
at
is
all.
A drop in the bucket that hammered the nail home.
Well, no, but a drop in the bucket is a saying, and hammering something home is a saying. They just shouldn't go together.
Yeah, they didn't make about as much sense as what I said.
Yeah, that is true. But you understood my meaning. Isn't language great?
It is great.
That's a great segue to our next segment where we wanted to talk about how...
Well, you didn't let me talk about the things that I internalized whenever I was a kid.
Oh, okay. I thought that was it.
All you did was... No, you just talked about your experience.
Oh, my God. I feel... Well, since we've been married for so long, I feel like we're one person.
No,
and so, like,
we're not.
We've had all the same experiences.
No, we haven't.
But, so yeah, Rachel, tell me... What did you internalize as a child watching this movie?
I internalized... So this is a good time to talk about gender a little bit.
Okay.
I always questioned authority from the very beginning, which is weird because my parents did their damnedest to hammer it out of me, questioning authority. But it just made me madder and want to question authority more.
Yeah, it's also interesting because they made you read so, or they let you read so many books.
Yeah, they never censored my reading. Bad move, parents. I read so much Anne Rice.
Oh, God. is that how you free your mind, is with Anne mind. Rice?
It's how I freed my mind.
You got red-pilled with Anne Rice. Is that what it was?
No, I'm reticent to use the term red-pilled anything. Because red-pilled now equals I hate women.
I know. I wanted to see how you would react to that.
But the only female character in there besides Ethel, which I remember her name really well, but is the Selma Blair-looking Italian woman. Fiorella?
Fiorella.
Is that her name?
Okay, there's a few things that are wrong with what you just said. One, Ethel is Edgar's wife.
I know. You're not listening to me. What I said was the two women, one of whom was Ethel, and the other one... Oh,
you're talking about two different people. I thought you were combining them into one character, and I was like, what the hell is this?
It would help if you listened.
I am listening. I'm just confused. But now I feel better.
Now you feel better? You should feel worse.
No, I feel better because you unconfused me. You unfucked my mind.
Oh my God. So, anyway, the two women in there, I'm going to have to restart. Two women in there that are named are the doctor, who's the coroner, and Ethel, Edgar's wife. And Ethel is sort of a throwaway character. She doesn't really... She's there to get abused, and then she's there to deliver information, and then she drops off the face of this movie. And then there's the doctor, and she's not as objectified as I have seen.
Yeah.
But she's still... And she has a job. She's a coroner, and she's smart, and... but Will Smith's character still tries to, like, get with her. And then she gets, like, damsels in distress away, like, by the bug.
A few times.
But in the end, she ends up saving them.
It's true. I mean, to me, it felt kind of... I don't know. It felt like they were just, like, throwing that character a bone. And it really didn't make... Like, in a lot of cases, I mean, it's better than the worst it could be. Which we say a lot,
yeah,
I guess.
The worst it could be is watching The Price is Right from 1969. Don't watch it.
You mean Family Feud.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, Family Feud.
But, she is a doctor, and she, like, solves parts of the mystery on her own.
Yeah.
Like, discovering the galaxy on the cat's collar. But she's never... the exclusive person that figures something out. It's always, like, concurrent with a man figuring it out.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, like, redundant for it to happen in the movie, and it feels like a throwaway to me.
Yeah. But as a little girl, I got to watch a woman be smart and capable, even if it... Which is more so than I did... almost all other times.
That's true. It's that does go to the point where we're kind of at a very low bar where we're just like, at least this.
Yeah.
And
that rubbed off on me. But who I really loved was Vincent D'Onofrio as a kid.
Oh yeah.
For some reason I internalized the cockroach guy so hard.
That was who you wanted to be when you grew up.
I did. I wanted to go through and be like, you don't understand, and then just murder people.
I think that's so weird that you say that, because, like, while we were watching the movie, like, he does some pretty fucked up shit in this movie.
He does.
And you were like, oh, I hate this part. Oh, I hate this part. But that was, like, the character you remember the most. Maybe it disturbed you.
Yeah, I liked it.
It definitely disturbed me. You mentioned, like, that scene where the pest guy shows up in the barn.
Yeah, that scared me.
He gets his sprayer, like, jammed down his throat.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucked up.
It is fucked up, but I did like that character. And also, I just thought Vincent D'Onofrio was the goddamn best.
He really does make you believe that he's something else inside a Vincent D'Onofrio outfit.
It's scary.
Skin suit. It's, yeah. Yeah, it's gross. I really do think he did a great job, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see. What else do we got? There were... Oh, God, I've got a ton of notes on here that we already went through. I should have been looking at this stuff ahead of time.
My God. Oh, I have some stuff we haven't talked about.
Oh, well, say it. Go ahead.
I thought it was kind of a nice nod to New York's diversity.
Yeah.
There's a neat little nod. The little tiny aliens were inhabiting Jewish jewelers' bodies.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, like, if I were to be writing a paper on this, I think it would be a really neat source for to talk about diaspora.
Yeah.
And like Jewish diaspora with the Achilleans. Is that the name of them?
Archillians.
Archillians.
Yeah.
Because they inhabit like Jewish bodies, and also they are in control of something great and powerful, the galaxy.
Yeah.
Right? And not only that, but they have a warship circling Earth now. And so, I would probably talk about the Archillians as the state of Israel.
Wow. Okay.
If I were to talk about this in terms of, like, diaspora and Jewish experience, and, like, this roach comes in and is like, I want this thing. And the Jews are like, no. And then they just murder him. Oh, my God. Not again, but I mean, I'm not saying one thing or the other on the state of Israel, because I haven't made my thesis or my conclusion about that, but I have many, many thoughts about Israel, and they're very complex.
Oh, sure, yeah. And that's another interesting facet of this movie, is how Earth is kind of used as they describe it as like an apolitical refugee harbor, like Casablanca without the Nazis.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of different people from a lot of different worlds that are, mm-hmm. you know, there for whatever reason, trying to escape something or hide from something or whatever.
Yeah.
An interesting dynamic. Yeah, it really is.
And there was kind of like the image of the Statue of Liberty a little bit.
Oh, for sure. Or just like in terms of like an Ellis Island type immigration lines or whatever in the Men in Black headquarters and stuff like that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I just thought, like, and they didn't have to do that stuff. It doesn't have to be complicated like that. But that's cool that it is. And I feel like with Spielberg as the executive producer, it was on purpose.
Yeah, probably. I didn't even remember that Spielberg had anything to do with this movie, honestly.
Me neither.
But it did definitely have his touch on it.
It did.
Watching it this time, we could definitely tell. So, one other thing I wanted to talk about is I really liked Will Smith and how he treats women in this movie.
Yeah.
Treats women, in this movie. The two women that speak and have names in this movie.
Yeah.
I liked one scene where he's, they're in the morgue trying to figure out what happened to the Archillians that got killed by the bug. And, he's hitting on her or whatever. And, but it seems mutual to me. Like, they both seem attracted to each other. She's like, you have pretty eyes. And he's like, oh, thank you. And then they start kind of getting into it.
She's hitting on him first, honestly.
Yeah. And then, like, he goes back to talk to Tommy Lee Jones, and it's kind of a humorous interaction where he's like, so, what do you think? And he goes, oh, I think, she's got a real neat Queen of the Undead thing going on over there. Like, mistakenly talking about her instead of the actual mystery. But I thought it was interesting that the first thing he mentioned is basically her personality. Like, that's so unusual for a blockbuster movie like this with a throwaway romance where, like, she's kind of just an interesting person more than anything. And then, Kay's like, no, I meant the body. And he's like, oh, well, she's got a nice body, too. it's a joke. But I thought that was something that was, it was a nice touch for a movie like this, where typically, if there's a love interest, like in a Transformers movie or something, like she has zero personality and, has her boobs out.
Yeah.
Short shorts, that kind of stuff.
Well, the
casting, I mean, the director and the costuming people have her boobs out for us.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know what I mean? Just how the movie portrays a love interest to us.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I think that's important, like the way that a woman is portrayed, even in a throwaway, like a role of lesser importance.
Right.
Like it's important not to also like do damage to an entire gender of people by being like, oh, well, she's only valued for her looks.
Right.
Like even if she's just going to be in a couple of scenes, oh, you know, she has a job, she's smart, like, and that's what's attractive about her and not just the way that she looks.
I would have liked to see more female aliens.
Oh, for sure. Even, I mean, I think the only one that I can think of is that pregnant squid lady. And she doesn't really actually show her alien form at all, other than just, like, the tentacle that comes out.
Yeah.
So, there weren't a whole lot of aliens. But I wonder, I mean, we assume that they're men. The aliens are male. Yeah,
they're voiced by men.
Are they? Well, I mean, Vincent D'Onofrio, but...
But yeah, the little like cockroach alien and the pug alien and the
oh yeah,
like
that's true.
Reggie
yeah.
is a man and Jeebs is a man and
yeah, I think maybe they make up for that. And I didn't see Men in Black 2, but the main villain is a woman in that movie.
Yeah,
And she's a female alien that's like disgusting or something. I don't really know.
I have no idea. I can't speak on that. I never saw it.
We'll have to watch it. Yeah, I heard it wasn't very good. Yeah. So I just never saw it.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah. You know what? We forgot to do the blurb for the back of the DVD box.
Jordan.
Oh, no. The tradition is ruined.
We can
make
we do
up
it now?
For it. We can make up for it right here.
Okay, okay.
Rachel, what would you put on the back of a DVD box to describe Men in Black?
Gosh, it's a hard one. Because usually I can say something snitty and funny.
Yeah.
But this one I actually like. I guess... Special agency employees J and K, right?
Yep.
J and K. Stumble through New York attempting to thwart... the destruction of Earth by aliens.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would say, I mean, that's probably the tamest blurb you've done so far, for sure.
Yeah.
I guess that does mean you really like this movie.
Yeah, I do like this movie.
With that, let's talk about race in this movie.
Yeah, let's talk about race. The main character is Will Smith, who's black.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I'm into that. Good job, Hollywood. I would have liked to see more extras and more background characters, either be women or people of color. There was a whole van of Mexican Americans.
Yeah.
But they didn't have really. They were just
any speaking roles.
Yeah, and they were
they
stereotyped.
Just looked terrified. Yeah. The only other person of color I can really think of in this movie was the best of the best of the best, sir.
Uh-huh.
Like in that. That scene there, I think he's in the Air Force or maybe the Army. I can't remember his uniform off the top of my head. But, not a lot of representation. But at the same time, like, Will Smith makes a lot of references to race without really committing to, like, talking about problems or anything. I mean...
Sure.
He jumps off that bridge and says, you know, it'd be raining black people in New York.
Yeah.
He has a scene later on where he tells the bug, like he's stomping on cockroaches to distract the bug, and he's saying, like, you know, y'all look alike to me.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Just little lines in there everywhere. What do you think that was about?
I think that when Men in Black was made, there were the buddings of discussion about modern race relations in America.
Sure.
And I think that we weren't really... This movie wasn't the place or the platform to have talk about really anything serious. It just hinted at things.
Sure, yeah.
And I think it's a way for things to be more palatable for a wider audience.
Sure, yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't pander. So I think instead of, I think that it had moments where it was talking about race. Just like with the Jews, I think it was talking about anti-Semitism, but it doesn't, it's not heavy-handed with either of them.
Yeah, I feel like those lines and those references and the like inclusion of several different diverse and often persecuted groups of people.
Uh-huh.
I do feel like that was intentional in a movie that's about, you know, people who are or beings that are different and alone in a minority on a like in an unfamiliar place.
Right.
But, yeah, like you said, it is a comedy movie. So, like, they're not going to be, you know, like, quoting Mandela and doing anything like that. But they do, make mention of it and, you know, bring it in as a humorous, kind of humorous way to draw attention to an issue, I guess. I mean, this is the late 90s, like, not long after Rodney King. Like, that was 92, so this is, like, 5 years later.
Yeah.
Like, this stuff was tense.
Yeah.
I wonder what that was like. I mean, I know that Will Smith improvs a lot of his own lines.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that was something he added in there or if it was written in the script. That would be something I would be curious to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, like all movies from that era, I would have liked to see more women and more people of color. But I did that Will Smith wasn't really stereotyped.
Mm-hmm.
And neither was that young, I don't know, I thought it was a Navy SEAL or something. He was like, the best of the best of the best, sir. There didn't seem to be a lot of that. And the perp that he was chasing was a white guy, so that was kind of nice.
Yeah, it was. The alien from the beginning of the movie was like in disguise. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there were some subversions here. It was nice to see him as being the most successful officer in his precinct. Oh, you know what? Another character that's black was the chief or his boss or whoever who's interviewing him about that weird alien chase from the beginning.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, just background.
Oh, yeah. And the old guy who lets people in the door.
At the Men in Black headquarters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So there were a good handful of people of color.
Yeah.
Well, not women of color.
No, and that's
poor women.
That's a common problem.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a woman in a movie, she's probably going to be white.
Yeah.
Very few roles for black women in Hollywood, like, at all.
It's because they don't let black women write.
Yeah, well, that is true. I mean, hopefully we're on a different path with, like, you know, now we've got some women of color directors who are getting prominence. And
Girls Trip was great.
Yeah, that was great. But yeah, hopefully we'll get like some new and different stories.
Yeah.
But I felt like this was a good story and it has good values behind it. And
yeah, and it didn't try to do too much.
Yeah, exactly. It was nice and short and sweet.
Yeah.
Told an understandable, digestible, and entertaining story.
Yeah, I mean,
had a good message to it.
Sure. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about Men in Black.
Yeah, me too. Would we say this is a disaster?
No, I would say this is the opposite of a disaster.
Yeah,
I would say triumph.
A triumph. Wow.
No, wouldn't say it's a triumph, but it is super
putting that
fun.
I'm putting that on the quote for this episode, like a triumph.
Rachel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow, they won't be expecting that one.
A triumph. It's not a triumph. It's fine.
It is, but yeah, I would agree. I really like this movie. I think we'll probably end up watching it again sometime.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I mean, we take long breaks in between, but
yeah,
we'll eventually watch this again, I feel.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, cool. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come right back. Okay.
100% hotter after this.
Oh, yeah. 100% hotter.
Oh,
on
no.
Netflix.
You're recording this.
Guys, on Netflix, there's a British make under show called 100% Hotter that went for one season. If you want to have a good time.
Oh, my God.
That's the show we've been binging recently.
It is.
But, Rachel, I wanted to ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you know how many reviews we have on Apple Podcasts right now?
I have absolutely no idea.
It's 7. Can you believe
it?
7? Yeah. We have four new 5-star reviews to read today. I can't even believe it. Yeah.
How come I only have 2 in my hand?
Well, because I'm going to read the other 2.
Oh, okay.
But you can have them all if you want.
I don't. I just wondered where they were.
Yeah. So, hey, Rachel, read the first one for us there.
The first one is from your sister.
Oh,
hi,
really?
Lauren.
Hey, Lauren.
This podcast is hilarious and refreshing. The banter between Jordan and Rachel is lighthearted, but also brings to light some interesting things about these childhood favorites. I cannot wait to try some of the treats Rachel makes. They all sound delicious in all caps.
Well, Lauren, they are delicious. Mm-hmm. I should tell you that yellow cake was amazing.
I was pretty proud of that.
You guys should try it. My favorite one so far is still the salted caramel cheesecake, though.
Yeah, you love a good cheesecake.
That was well beyond everything else.
Wow.
It was so good.
Wow.
I love cheesecake and that sugar-free one. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe that it's sugar-free if I made it. But yeah, we've got another one here titled Characterization of Life from V Zebra. 5 stars, it says. Jordan and Rachel have created a unique podcast. It's appealing to all types of people and so fun to hear their descriptions of movies and the food. Very creative in both aspects of the podcast.
Oh, thanks,
V-Zebra. Yeah, V-Zebra, thank you. I do hope that this is appealing to all types of people. I don't know whether or not it is. We'll see. I mean, some people listen to this.
If it appeals to you, that's good. If it doesn't, you know, that's also fine.
Yeah. But if it doesn't appeal to you for whatever reason, let us know. We have a Gmail address you can send stuff to.
But I'm not going to hear about it.
Yeah, recipefordisastershow@gmail.com. Send it over. Let me know why if it doesn't appeal to you. And if we can fix it, we'll fix
it.
No,
we won't.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Actually, no.
Sorry, that's the boss.
Yep.
But yeah, Rachel, read that other review that you've got there.
This is from Kielbasa Cannoli.
I know who that is.
It says, I like podcast. It is good and funny. I want to hear more. Like a caveman.
Just like Men in Black. Short, sweet, to the point.
I like podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Kielbasa Cannoli.
Yeah. Wow. It's not still spelled the traditional way. It's spelled K-I-L-L.
That's violent.
Kielbasa Cannoli.
Kielbasa. Mm-hmm. Some kind of like food wizard.
Yeah.
Or something.
Wow.
So yeah, and we have one more review here from Longhorn Rick that says, I laughed, I cried, I want the dessert. I wasn't sure what to expect from a combination movie review and cooking show, but the combo is a winner. The unscripted banter between Jordan and Rachel is highly entertaining, and I have to say that they definitely have a different perspective on the film than I do, but that's part of what makes it so much fun to listen.
Aww.
But hands down, the best part is the awesome recipe included with every podcast.
Aww. Longhorn Rick.
Yeah, so sweet. Yeah, you know, I mean, we're definitely going to have a different perspective on the movies than most people. We're self-described haters.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, no fun in here. But
that's
we have a lot of fun.
There's this episode of Metalocalypse.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Where they go to Norway because Toki's...
Oh, my God.
Toki's parents have... Well, his dad is sick, and they go to Norway, and Toki is like, oh, come on, guys, it's the home of black metal. And so they're standing in this, like, adorable village in Norway looking at all these precious shops, and one of them is like, they're looking for the original black metal shop. And they're standing there, and they're like, and the lead singer says,
the Nathan Explosion says, "Is that it?" And it's like this adorable little ski shop. And Toki's like, "No, that's the ski shop." And he's like, "Is that it?" And it's like a bakery. He's like, "No, that's a bakery." And he goes, "Is that it?" And it's this like black house with spikes shooting out of it.
Blood moat.
Blood. There's a blood moat. And there's just a black metal scream in the background like,
"Oh yeah, that's it.
That's it." And they get in, and the guy who's running the black metal shop has, like, this really lo-fi, awful black metal screaming in the background. And they walk in, and he goes, "Oh, it's the commercially successful death clock." And Toki goes, "This is a cool song." And he goes, "It's my demo. Do you like it?" And Pickles goes, "It's okay." And he goes, "Then I hate it." And that's how I feel.
That's you. You're that black metal guy in the shop in Norway.
Yeah. Like, "Then I hate it."
Do you like it?
It's
all right. "Then I hate it." Yes.
Watch that episode of Death Clock. No, I'm sorry, Metalocalypse.
Oh, and I go off on tangents describing things too much.
I never said I didn't.
But anyway, so
you
I've got...
edit that out.
No, I'm not going to edit it out. That's the best part. Our ramblings are the best part of all.
Oh, to us.
Yeah. So I've got this hat sitting here because, as promised, 5-star reviews get people entered into a sweepstakes to choose our movie for episode 7. And so we're going to do that now. I'm stirring it around for Rachel. And why don't you pull one of these out of the hat?
Oh, I get to draw?
Yeah.
Last Christmas.
I wish I could do a drum roll, but I can't.
This is Longhorn Rick.
Longhorn Rick, you are the winner. You earned the right to choose the movie for us for episode 7. I think I'm pretty sure I know who Longhorn Rick is, so I'm going to give him an email and see what movie he wants us to review for episode 7.
Great.
That'll be coming up next week.
Alrighty.
Other than that, like us on Facebook. We're there at Recipe for Disaster Podcast. We're starting to get some followers on there. I'm liking it. You know, keep it up. That's where we put news and post things, and we'll respond to you if you leave us a note or a comment or something. We're lonely. Let us know.
Oh, speak for yourself. I'm not lonely.
Well, Rachel's not there. She's doing other things. She's outside, biking around, playing, soaking in some sunshine.
Playing in the garden.
Yeah. Plenty to do. But I'll talk to you, because I don't like the sun. I don't like to be outside.
I hate it.
Oh, but anyway, thank you so much, guys, for
thank
listening.
You.
And
thank you for the reviews.
Yeah, thank you. Please continue to send 5-star reviews. We'll if you put it on Apple Podcasts, we will read it out loud on the air.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.